The Ron DeSantis administration begins with a bang.
Billions for the environment and an acknowledgement of rising seas.
Plus, the first of three new state Supreme Court justices.
This is the Florida Roundup from WLRN Public Media in Miami and WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Well, Florida's new governor was sworn into office this week and wasted no time getting to work. One of his first orders of business, directing more than $2 billion to help algae outbreaks in the state. DeSantis will also create the state's first resiliency office. And he picked his first Supreme Court replacement, too.
Welcome to the DeSantis administration here on the Florida Roundup. Join the conversation 305-995-1800 statewide. Also on Twitter at Florida Roundup. It's next after the news. Welcome to the Florida Roundup this week. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Ron DeSantis was sworn in as the new governor of Florida.
I, Ron DeSantis, do solemnly swear
that I will support, protect, and defend the Constitution and government of the United States and of the state of Florida that I am duly qualified.
And right away, DeSantis got to work.
Yeah, he did, Melissa. By the end of his fourth day this Friday in office, DeSantis will have pledged $2.5 billion over 4 years for water resources and Everglades restoration here in Florida. He will have created the state's first ever Office of Resiliency, called for the resignations of an entire board of a regional water management district. He will have announced his first of three picks to sit on the Florida Supreme Court, toured Hurricane Michael restoration efforts in the Panhandle, pulled back a slate of 11th-hour appointments made by outgoing Governor Rick Scott, and is expected by the end of the day Friday here today, Melissa, to suspend the Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel for his department's role in the Stoneman Douglas High School shooting. And, oh, yeah, this little tidbit, right? He's making his way around the state in a plane seized in a drug bust.
Welcome to the DeSantis administration. Man, that's a lot in a few days. Can he keep up this breakneck pace? What else can we expect from the new governor? We're going to begin the Florida Roundup this hour with a closer look at that. We're pleased to welcome from the WFSU studios in Tallahassee, Jim Sanders, Executive Director for News Service of Florida, and Ana Ceballos. She covers state government and politics for the USA Today Network. Thanks to you both for being with us here on the Florida Roundup.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
And as the Ron DeSantis era begins in Florida, what are your thoughts and questions? What are you hoping Governor DeSantis focuses on? Give us a call from anywhere in the state this Friday. It's 305-995-1800 to call us up on the Roundup. 305-995-1800 or tweet us at Florida Roundup, and we'll get some of those tweets on the air as well. Okay, Ana, let's begin with you. Rick Scott is out, Ron DeSantis is in, and by the way, we also heard no love lost between these two men as one vacated the governor's mansion and a new and much younger family moved in. DeSantis certainly departing from Rick Scott on a number of issues, most importantly, environmental issues. He's saying he's going to pledge more than $2 billion for clean water in Florida and Everglades restoration. We're getting the first ever Office of Resiliency in Florida. Still, though, no mention of climate change from Governor DeSantis as he talks about these issues. Can he stake out a path as an environmental Republican governor in this state? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I think he has already made it clear that he is one who will governor who will be fighting and combating water issues here in the state. But you're right. I mean, he's careful in towing the line and when he and how he describes himself as a climate denier or not. Today he said in a press conference, when he was specifically asked whether or not he was a believer in climate change or whether he agreed with scientists who say that climate change is a human cost problem. And he said that, you know, he's more concerned about fighting the issues with changes in the environment than, you know, knowing what is causing these issues. So he's definitely careful with how he says that he still has a base to that elected him who may consider the term toxic. So I think that's what we're seeing.
So the term notwithstanding, he did in his executive order, Jim Saunders, talk specifically about sea level rise, pointed to sea level rise and the threat that it poses in the coastal areas in Florida, more than 1,000 miles of coastland, to his creation of this Office of Resiliency and Coastal Protection. You know, during the campaign, the first position paper that the DeSantis campaign released was on the environment. And here we are, the first significant issue on an executive order that comes from the DeSantis administration is on the environment. Jim, is this setting the tone for what to expect, not only in this legislative session, but frankly, how this administration is going to approach the environment in Florida, compare and contrast to the Scott administration's 8 years?
Well, I think one thing to remember is that a lot of these environmental issues and water issues that have been very prominent over the past year have been in very Republican areas. I mean, Martin County, Lee County, Collier County, Sarasota County, some of those areas are Republican strongholds. And I think Governor DeSantis, he probably heard a lot about this while he was out on the campaign trail. And as a result, I think he's responded to it. You know, I think there's a lot of questions still out there. I mean, the $2.5 billion is a big number, but how do you get there? Is it state money? Is it federal money? There are a lot of issues out there that are still unresolved. But I think he's certainly sending a signal that that this is going to be a priority for him. And, you know, when you got all this, you know, nice homes on the water in Martin County or Sarasota County, and it's got all this garbage in the water. Mm-hmm. I think you heard a lot about it.
Sure. It's a bipartisan issue. We're all going to be affected by this, Anna. What about the fact, too, that DeSantis basically told the entire board of a regional water management district in South Florida to step down Rick Scott's picks? He also yanked back a bunch of 11th hour appointments Scott made. And at the same time, we heard chatter about tension between the two politicians as Rick Scott held a party in the governor's mansion after he had officially moved out and the DeSantis family was trying to move in with their two little kids. I mean, this is kind of crazy stuff here. You don't normally see this kind of transfer of power between a couple of Republican or, frankly, Democratic politicians either way. What's the backstory there? And can is DeSantis sending a message that, look, this is going to be a new era, I guess, in Florida when it comes to water issues? He's really publicly making a harsh break from Scott.
Right. And I think it's been clear that it's going to be a different administration. And, you know, they were very quiet during the transition when, you know, that I had heard that they were experiencing some issues, but no one was really quite going public about it. But as soon as Scott left, you know, Congressman Matt Gaetz, who's a very close ally of both DeSantis, Governor DeSantis, and Trump, he was very vocal immediately saying, we had a horrible time dealing with this transition. And, you know, he told me that he had asked, that they had asked, the administration had asked Scott to not make more appointments, and that he just did not honor that request. We saw, you know, about 100 of them in the last week, the 76 on the last Friday. A lot of them are, you know, DeSantis does have the authority to pull those that need Senate confirmation. He has the authority to, you know, maybe just not have them heard. And I think that's what he told us yesterday he will do. And so it is definitely a sign that they, you know, maybe he did not really appreciate some of the things that Scott did at the last moment. It's unclear why, like you said, you know, they're two Republicans. It should not have been maybe this rough.
Maybe they both planned to run for president at some point.
Maybe. We'll see.
I think that might be one guess, but
could be.
It's 305-995-1800 here on the Florida Roundup. Tom, also our guests, let's talk about the fact, too, that DeSantis toured the Hurricane Michael restoration efforts. Still a lot of people suffering in the panhandle. He's going to suspend Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel over the South Florida shootings at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. And then let's talk about Supreme Court justices as well, as he announces his slate of preferred justices. No African Americans as yet on that list, Jim Saunders. But let's talk about his first pick for Florida Supreme Court justice. This is going, we're going to be seeing, you know, a conservative slate of justices on the state's highest court. The next Supreme Court justice is Barbara Lagoa, a Hispanic female. That's a first. Your thoughts about this appointment?
Well, I think the appointments to the Supreme Court may be the most important long-lasting thing that he does. I mean, this has been a big issue for years. Republicans have been unhappy with the Supreme Court because it struck down so many things from the legislature and Governor Scott and even going back to Governor Bush. Barbara Lagoa is a veteran appeals court judge from Miami. She served the past, I think she was appointed by Jeb Bush in 2006. Mm-hmm. So she's got a lot of experience. And during the press conference when she was announced, she pretty much mirrored DeSantis's views about the role of the Constitution, the role of the legislature, and that the court should not trump the legislature unnecessarily. And that's music to the ears of conservatives. That's what they've wanted for years and years, is a court that that is more conservative. And the legislature, which has been controlled by Republicans for more than 20 years now, they've been frustrated. So, you know, he has two more picks coming. The three justices were required to retire this week, Barbara Pariente, Peggy Quince, and Fred Lewis, they were all pretty liberal, and they angered the business community and social conservatives a lot. So he's got a chance here to make a real long lasting impact. Barbara Lagoa, I believe, is 51. She can be on that court for 20 years, almost 25 years. So if he makes similar picks, he can this could be meaningful for decades.
Lots of movement already in the DeSantis administration on the Florida Supreme Court, remaking the judiciary in the Sunshine State, something he promised on the campaign trail, and also more money for water and for the environment in Florida, something else that he talked about on the campaign trail. 305-995-1800. Let's begin in Tampa. Christine on line three. Go ahead, Christine. You're on the radio.
Hi, appreciate it. I just wanted to say that I am a Republican-leaning independent. I love the new governor. Very happy to see a Republican leader be a champion for the environment. Love what he did with the South Florida Water Management District, and I hope he does the same with the corrupt board of the Southwest Florida Management District and the whole Baruth situation that is under investigation.
So you're happy what you hear so far. Did you vote for him?
Absolutely.
You did. Great. Christine, thanks for joining us. 305-995-1800 or on Twitter at Florida Roundup.
Ana Sabayas, she was mentioning Carlos Baruth, an 11th hour appointment, I think is what she was referring to about Governor Rick Scott. Let's expand on that a little bit. That got a little bit of attention, but most people haven't followed that story closely.
Sure. Like you said, he was Baruth was a very close friend of Scott's. He was a very big supporter of both his U.S. Senate and even here when he was the U.S. Senate race and when he was a governor here in Florida. So they've been pretty close allies. And, you know, he got a last minute appointment to the Wildlife Commission. And, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that specific name because, you know, he has his own rocky history with some, you know, giving when he was a member in the regional Southwest Florida. What was the board?
Was the Southwest Florida
Water Management District.
Right.
Yeah. The Water Management
There's
District,
lots of
correct.
Boards and commissions we're talking about here, yeah.
He resigned, and it was after he gave a land deal on to a friend of his, and he resigned. Now he was appointed last minute by Scott, and he has a history with DeSantis. And again, Matt Gaetz was, you know, sharing quite a lot soon after the transition ended. And he was mentioning that they were not very friendly with one another when he was running for U.S. Senate to replace Marco Rubio, which, you know, it ended up not happening when he came out of the presidential race. But DeSantis and Baruch have quite a history, and, you know, he might not want to have him on the Wildlife Commission, especially when the environment has been, you know, the cornerstone of his campaign, and we're seeing now that it's going to be one of his big priorities as governor. And he might want to bring his own person to have a fresh start and, you know, have a good grip on what the environment proposals
all about.
Like,
yeah, sure. Got lots of calls about that. Tweets coming into the Florida Roundup, too. Charles tweets the show. Reminder that the Groveland Four were pardoned this morning unanimously, a victory for advocates that wanted four black men falsely accused of raping a white woman in Lake County some years ago. They finally received pardons. Here's a tweet from Jillian. Not wanting to focus on the cause of environmental issues, but only the solutions. Well, how can you generate data-informed solutions when you don't know or won't acknowledge the root cause of an issue? We'll continue to get into that, Jillian, as well. Let's also take some calls on the Florida Roundup. It's 305-995-1800. Alex is in Jacksonville right now. Hey, Alex, you're on the air.
This is Andy.
Andy. Okay, go ahead, Andy.
I'm delighted to see Republicans fight with each other. I enjoy that. I enjoy seeing DeSantis.
I take it you're not a Republican. Okay.
I guess I'd sooner vote for Yellow Dog than to vote for a Republican. But even though I say that, DeSantis does seem that he's probably finally making it legal to talk about climate change after having been illegal for state employees for 8 years to talk about climate change. So I'm a little bit torn up now. DeSantis is asking people to step down from terms where there's designed to have an overlap, and you're not supposed to do that. I think it's a dangerous precedent. I wonder what you all think. Isn't it a dangerous precedent for a governor?
Okay, yeah. Thank you for that, Andy. So on the one end, he likes DeSantis making environmental changes. On the other, Jim, he's saying it's bad precedent to sweep out a whole board at once. What about that?
Well, it is kind of difficult, and he didn't leave. He didn't foreclose the possibility that some of these appointments that Scott made and could be, you know, they could still go through. So, but it looks like the South Florida Water Management District, you're right, he is trying to clean house there. Some of them have terms that were supposed to be running for another 4 years, so 3 or 4 years. So it's going to be interesting to see their reaction. As of yesterday afternoon when all this was breaking, we hadn't really received any reaction from the Water Management District members themselves. You know, Governor Scott took a lot of heat for some things he did early in his administration that a lot of people viewed as weakening the Water Management Districts or making them too industry friendly. And so I think there is some, you know, some effort by DeSantis to make it appear at least that he's being tough. And most of the issues involve the South Florida Water Management District, the territory that they cover.
Let's get a quick call in here from Orlando Espinosa on line five. Go ahead. You're on the radio.
Hi. I just wanted to say I'm a Democrat. I did not vote for DeSantis. I am encouraged by what he's done so far for environmental policies, protecting the water and investing more with that. I hope that he'll take it a step further and start addressing climate change and acknowledging it. But so far, I'm encouraged by what I'm seeing.
Espinosa, thanks for sharing those thoughts. Jim, how about that encouragement you're hearing, at least from a central state Democrat? Is the new governor currying favor with Democrats ahead of the legislative session, do you think, with some of these actions?
Well, it certainly appears so. And, you know, going back to the tweet you had earlier on the Groveland 4 issue, which I realize is not an environmental issue, but that's something the Democrats have been pushing for years, is pardoning the Groveland 4. So I think he is trying to, take some steps that will have broad appeal, and I also think that's kind of important after coming out of the campaign that we were just in. He got attacked as being a Trump acolyte, if you will, and a lot of Democrats were repulsed by that.
Yeah, yeah. And, who could forget that build the wall ad, right?
Weren't fans
of it. Yeah.
And then there was also, he made a racially charged comment
let's continue that as we take a short break. But we want your calls and tweets on the Florida Roundup. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Back in a moment. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami from the WFSU studios, our sister station in Tallahassee. Executive editor for News Service of Florida, Jim Saunders, is with us here. Ana Ceballos covers state government and politics for the USA Today Network in Florida. Your phone calls at 305-995-1800. 4 days into the DeSantis administration, actions on ethics, actions on the environment, actions on law enforcement and the Supreme Court. What are your thoughts on the first 96 hours of Ron DeSantis as governor in the state of Florida? 305-995-1800. Ana, let me ask you just in terms of the new governor's relationship on in the state capitol. Governor Scott's first oath of office for a public office was as governor in 2011. And he had, I think it's fair to say, kind of a difficult relationship with the Republican majority in the state capitol at times. What is that going to look like for the new governor?
Right. We always saw that, at least with Scott, how there was always a little bit of a power struggle between the three branches of government here. And DeSantis, at least on his, what was it? I believe it was his first day, his first full day in office. He told lawmakers basically like, hey, I want us to all be equal. And I think that was a new thing we were hearing. I believe his exact quote were, you're not subordinate to the executive power. And I think that it came from, or at least that's what he was telling us that it came from, was because he didn't want the state government to work like the federal government does because of his experience in Congress. And so that was, a new take on how that relationship could work. And it'll be interesting to see exactly how it plans out, right? I mean, one thing is to say it, one thing is to see it in action.
Yeah, we'll see that
and,
March
and
April.
He definitely has allies in both chambers, good Republicans endorsing good Republicans, but we will see how priorities play out and how their relationship unfolds.
Here's a tweet coming into the Florida Roundup from Sharon. I ditto the previous caller's concern about that last-minute appointment of Carlos Baruff to the Florida Fish and Wildlife Commission. Such a swampy move. Jim Saunders, when Ron DeSantis served in Congress, he was a member of the Hard Right Freedom Caucus, who was continually railing against what his constituents saw as Washington corruption, calls to drain the swamp, no more corruption, no more business as usual, more accountability in government, etc. Can he bring that reform mindset to Tallahassee, which has a political culture that's come under heavy criticism and scrutiny from two cozy relationships between lobbyists and legislators, sexual harassment and assault, powerful politicians accused and sometimes even forced out of office from that, and just a host of other issues that have plagued our state capitol for so many years. Can DeSantis change that culture, or is he going to try? Is he even going to try?
Well, I think it's too early to tell. As you said, we're 96 hours in or whatever it is. But he has shown that he wants to work with the legislature. I don't know. A lot of the issues that go on in Tallahassee are with the legislature and lobbyists and how involved he would be in that situation, it's a little bit hard to tell at this point. He does bring Washington experience here, but he has also not ever served in Tallahassee before. So he's kind of a newcomer. One thing he did do that, just going back to what Ana was just talking about and also kind of goes to his approach here is he named Jeanette Nunez as lieutenant governor, and she's very well respected in the legislature. She was in the House leadership over the past couple of years, and I think that kind of helps smooth things. But whether that whether he's going to take on the swamp in Tallahassee, I think it's way too early to tell.
Is it a swamp or a forest in Tallahassee? I don't know.
Well, there's a little both. You just got to get outside of town a little bit.
305.
Some varied topography there.
995-1800, absolutely. Martha in Brevard County on line 6 wants to talk about the environment and the executive order that the new governor signed. Go ahead, Martha. You're on the radio. Martha, you're with us. Go ahead.
Oh, hello. Yes, I already submitted my question. I thought you already saw it.
Go ahead. Shoot it to us.
Yes, I'd like you to expand upon this new Department of Resiliency, and also being in Brevard County, our Indian River Lagoon is getting worse by the week, and is there any plans to help with the algae blooms here instead of just South Florida?
Thanks, Martha. My understanding, Jim and Anna, of the executive order in terms of the algae blooms is it does work to try to address the cause in terms of holding water before, so that they don't have to let it go from Lake Okeechobee out to the east and west and fuel those algae blooms. And in terms of Martha's question about resiliency, it's this Office of Resilience and Coastal Protection. Brand new office, and not a lot of details around what that may look like, Jim.
Yeah, I'm not really sure what the office is, all of its duties are going to turn out to be. One thing I would say about the Indian River Lagoon, you know, one of the issues that I keep hearing about from that area is septic systems and, you know, the polluting into the lagoon and causing a lot of problems. He is talking about taking on that issue. There's also some legislation filed already for this year to deal with septic systems. I will tell you, though, it is a difficult issue for the legislature to deal with. They tried several years ago to regulate septic systems, and there was a big backlash from certain areas of the state that rely on septic systems. But that is one issue, one way they're talking about trying to address.
If memory serves right, Jim, though, Governor Scott, in his first few weeks or months, rolled back some septic inspection or septic regulations for homeowners, didn't he?
Right, and that's what I was referring to. There was a big piece of legislation several years ago that went in about inspections and trying to essentially prod people to clean up, you know, get off septic systems, get down to sewer systems, or to upgrade systems. But there are certain rural areas of the state, especially in the Panhandle, where that became very unpopular because of the cost, primarily. And it got reversed. So while it may have a lot of environmental benefits, I think, again, we kind of got to wait and see how this stuff plays out.
Anna, you know, Governor DeSantis said he's going to appoint a chief science officer, and I'm quoting here, so we make sure we're doing sound science so that we get ahead of the curve on these issues. Let me ask you, though, just referencing back to a tweet we got earlier in the hour where a listener said, how can you generate informed solutions when you don't know or won't acknowledge the root cause of an issue? Meaning that as yet, DeSantis still has not acknowledged the overwhelming consensus of the scientific community that sea level rise, a warming planet, worsening storms are largely due to man-made climate change, due to increased carbon emissions. So how do you see him handling this issue as he faces increased pressure to, get serious about the reality of climate change and how Florida is such a vulnerable state when it comes to rising waters and other related problems that we're going to continue to experience with more frequency?
Right. And I think we will be seeing, I guess, to answer your question would be, we'll be seeing his actions rather than words. Because, I mean, on the campaign trail, he would say, you know, I'm not a climate change denier, but I'm not a climate change believer. I don't know what exactly that says. But, I mean, I really don't have an answer for that. You would have to ask him as to how he hopes to juggle that position. But he's, you know, I think he's taking actions where he may prove what fixing the water issues, but in terms of the root cause of these things and whether or not he acknowledges the scientific community's conclusions as to what is causing these problems, I think we will have to see.
Have to see. And Karen is on the line from Wilton Manors. She's got a question about how we're going to pay for environmental projects in Florida. Hi, Karen. You're on the air. You're on the Florida Roundup.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. So I am a Democrat. I did not vote for DeSantis. And I'm certainly very happy to see that he's a change from Red Tide Rick. But my concern is that he you know, DeSantis comes from the Freedom Caucus. He's certainly not going to raise taxes, or I'd be surprised if he did. So where is he getting the money to pay for all these environmental programs? And, you know, our environment needs to be clean up, but at what cost to other programs that the state funds, whether
yes.
it's schools, etc.
Sure. And I appreciate that call so much, Karen. You know, Jim, on the other day, DeSantis said his spending would surpass Rick Scott's on this issue by up to $1 billion. That's a huge spike. And it does raise the question of how that will be funded.
Well, absolutely. And the, you know, we don't know whether he's going to look to federal money to help pay for that. Whether it's going to be state money. There was a constitutional amendment passed several years ago that, or a few years ago, that requires some real estate tax money to go into a state fund for conservation, environmental issues. That money's been sort of carved up into various projects, but there is money available there. Of course, there's a lawsuit about that, about the legislature misusing that money for other purposes. So, you know, there's some question there, too. But that is one potential source for at least some of it. You know, some of these things they can also issue bonds for, borrow money for. And, you know, they're doing some of that with the Everglades Reservoir that's in its early stages. So, I hate to sound like a broken record, but we got to see how some of this stuff plays out. You know, there could be a lot of financial pressures on the state in the next few years, especially if a recession takes place, which is getting a lot of discussion around the Capitol right now.
Or even if home prices and real estate prices slow down, which is part and parcel of funding that Amendment 1, as you mentioned, the environmental amendment that passed in 2014. Francis in Fort Pierce calling in to the Florida Roundup. Go ahead, Francis. Thanks for calling.
Hi, yes. I feel like the Me Too movement taking flight after white women complained. I feel like DeSantis is probably focusing on the environment in all probability due to squeaky rich wheels. And as a Democrat, it's his actions on, like the previous caller who mentioned where he's going to get the money, it's his actions on the health insurance, Medicaid, women's reproductive rights, and the ex-felon voting rights that remain to be seen before I'll give him a thumbs up.
Francis, we appreciate that. On Amendment 4, the felon voting rights, for instance, the governor has talked about the need for legislation. Supporters of that said there's no need. It's self-executing. And on health care, Jim and Anna, we haven't heard much at all from the administration, the new administration, other than the appointment to the healthcare group in Florida, but that also is kind of a watch this space area, isn't it?
Yeah, and I on Monday, or it was Monday, Lieutenant Governor Janet Nunes has been pretty involved in that issue, and she gave me a signal that she has talked to DeSantis, and she wants to make that one of her priorities, and she wants to have an active role and state government dealing with the healthcare issue. It's not very clear on details as to what will be done on that. They keep saying that they want to keep healthcare affordable, that they want to make sure that there's access for those in the Medicaid program, but details are still yet to be discussed. And as we saw on the campaign trail, healthcare was never quite an extensive topic discussed by DeSantis.
Yeah.
And there was never really, he was criticized quite a lot for not having a health care plan.
It wasn't until the final hours of the campaign that we saw a health care plan, Jim.
I think we know a couple things, one of which is the idea of expanding Medicaid eligibility is off the table. He's not going to let that happen. The legislature won't let that happen either. But, you know, that's a big issue, but it looks like it's off the table. He also appointed a Agency for Healthcare Administration secretary who is from the Trump administration and has kind of a controversial history in Maine, who is not a big fan of Medicaid expansion. So I think those are a couple of signals of where things are, you know, maybe going.
And when we pick up those signals, we'll have them here on the Roundup on Fridays. Jim Saunders, along with us, executive editor for News Service of Florida, and Ana Ceballos covers state government and politics for the USA Today Network. Both of them with us from our WFSU studios in Tallahassee. Thanks to both of you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Well, it's been more than a year since a criminal investigation began into the deaths of 12 patients left in the sweltering heat of a Hollywood nursing home after Hurricane Irma knocked out the AC in that South Florida building. And still, no one has been charged with a crime. This despite a state review that found the staff of the Rehabilitation Center at Hollywood Hills was responsible for those 12 senior deaths, Tom.
And, you know, unfortunately, that can be the norm here in Florida, where nursing home managers and staff avoid criminal charges despite state reviews that find credible evidence they caused the deaths of patients. This is detailed in a new USA Today Network Florida investigation. Melanie Payne is a reporter for USA Today Network and reported on these findings. She joins us via FaceTime. William Scott is also along with us, an attorney specializing in Florida elder abuse cases. He's with us from WJCT in Jacksonville. Comments, your thoughts, your experiences in assisted living facilities, nursing homes in Florida. 305-995-1800 at Florida Roundup is our Twitter handle. No age limit using Twitter, by the way. We'd love to hear from the greatest generation there, folks that may be facing some of these decisions, or perhaps you've got a parent or a loved one experiencing in real time a situation in a nursing home or an assisted living facility. 305-995-1800 is the phone number. Melanie, let me start with you. Surmise the findings, if you could. Summarize the findings that you were able to come up with for your report with USA Today Network when you looked at elder abuse and elder death cases in Florida.
Well, what happened with this most recent investigation that we did was we found that after the state verified that there was neglect or abuse that led to this person's death, very little, if anything, was done. Sometimes it wasn't even investigated. ACA, most of the time, did not give a penalty, and that's the Agency for Healthcare Administration, which regulates and licenses them. We never found a single case where anyone was ever brought to any sort of criminal charges for things that they did, even when, it was an accident, but then there were some intentional actions afterwards that could have possibly saved the person. We didn't find that anybody was held accountable for those either.
And William Scott, you're an attorney. You specialize in elder abuse cases. This is so common in Florida, which seems somewhat counterintuitive. You'd think we'd have more stringent review process for nursing home neglect cases. We certainly have a strict process when there's a child who dies and there's suspicion of abuse. Why not the same for senior deaths in Florida?
In Florida, you have the Agency for Healthcare Administration and the Department of Children and Families that do these investigations, and these are quasi-legal entities that do not have the power to make arrests and conduct the trials of these people who are responsible for these injuries. And when it comes to these prosecutors, the state attorneys who are charged for prosecuting these crimes and the police for investigating.
And we'll take a quick break. More here on the Florida Roundup in just a moment.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks again for listening this week to Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. As we continue talking about a new USA Today Network investigation of elder abuse, neglect, or mistreatment in the state's many nursing homes, we want your calls at 305-995-1800, tweets at Florida Roundup. Talking now with North Florida attorney William Scott, you represented the family of a man who died at a Palm Garden home in Jacksonville named Malcolm Luckin. Full disclosure, he is a relative of an employee here at WJCT, which is how we became aware of the case. He had fallen lots of times, was at risk for falling again, according to a state report, but then he fell. He died, and nursing home staff told authorities that they believed he intentionally threw himself on the floor in a suicide attempt. So that seems sketchy. It doesn't seem like an accurate explanation. But then when you talk to prosecutors, apparently the burden of proof is so high in these cases that it can be difficult to bring people that might have neglected a senior to justice. Why is it so difficult to prosecute these cases in Florida?
There's a couple reasons for that. The police and the prosecutors don't have the background or the training and experience to investigate these crimes, and often they don't have the resources as well. And there's another key problem is that the lack of evidence, the lack of witnesses who will come forward and testify that they saw anything, or the lack of anything of any tangible proof. And the nursing homes have their records, their notes, do not disclose often what actually happened.
They don't always keep detailed records. So it's the family accusing a nursing home staff, perhaps, without the data to prove their suspicions.
That's absolutely right. And what typically happens in these cases is the family comes to private attorneys like myself, who have the resources and training to do the lengthy and costly investigation that's involved. And the state attorneys just simply do not have that time or the resources to do this.
William, it's Tom Hudson. What role does the state have? What obligation does the state have when it comes to these kinds of deaths at these types of regulated state-licensed facilities?
That's a twofold answer there. ACA, the Agency for Healthcare Administration, will go in and conduct an investigation. And then oftentimes the Department of Children and Families will also go in and do an investigation. And once they complete their investigation, there may be a civil fine, but rarely, if ever, is it turned over to the state attorney or the police for a criminal investigation.
And as you said, prosecutors aren't really well-versed in these. Prosecutors tend to want to take on cases they can win. And with the burden of proof so high, that may be part of the reason why these are tough to prosecute. Meanwhile, here's a tweet about elder home abuse from Lauren, tweeting the Florida Roundup. The problem with nursing homes is most of them are money-hungry corporations who don't pay or train staff well enough. What are the standards, the regulations in Florida as relates to facilities? What I've always been given to understand is that it's really caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware. Research the facility you place your loved one in very carefully. Your thoughts about that?
That's exactly right. A lot of times people make their decisions on geography, how close the facility is to their home or how pretty the building is. But you really have to dig below the surface, get in there and find out what the staff is like, how many staff are there on a regular basis, how long they've been at the facility. When you're placing a loved one in a nursing home, it's one of the most critical decisions you can ever make. And you have to do your homework, do research, and check with people who know to make sure you're putting them in the right place.
In the right place, sure. And, you know, Tom, listen to some of these statistics. As we were speaking with Melanie Payne of the USA Today Network, the state identified 54 deaths over the last 5 years where there was sufficient evidence that a nursing home patient's death was due to either neglect or even mistreatment, but not one of those cases resulted in an arrest or a prosecution. And so while we have a review committee, teams of reviewers for every suspicious child death, we don't have that in Florida, William, although I think about 12 or 13 states have such a system in place for seniors. Is there any impetus, any movement to create that kind of process for Florida, given that we have so many senior citizens here?
Representative Farmer, Gary Farmer from Fort Lauderdale, has fought very hard to try to get changes into the system, but he has been blocked in his efforts by the nursing home lobby, which is an extremely powerful lobby. They're resisting any changes, and they actually want to lessen the regulations that are in place. A lot of things could be done to create the evidence that criminal investigators need. For example, surveillance cameras in the nursing homes. They call them granny cams. That would be one way to provide evidence to show what's actually going on, but that has been fought tooth and nail by the nursing home industry for years. Hmm. And it's a very inexpensive way to provide the evidence and to let families know what's actually going on in the facility.
Let me, Melanie, bring you back into the conversation. Melanie Payne, reporter for USA Today Network, which reviewed dozens of elder deaths through the Department of Children and Families, determining there was sufficient evidence that a nursing home patient's death was due to neglect or mistreatment. What was the response from state regulators when you presented them with this data?
We really didn't get a response from them. They said that they were going to change what some of the things that they were doing, have better communications. You know, once DCF determined that there was a death, they alert everybody. They send something to the Department of Health, which licenses the nurse and the doctors. They send it to ACA, which licenses the facility, and they send it to law enforcement. But it just seems to die once that happens.
And is there an automatic response? The attorney, William Scott, with us said it does trigger, you know, an investigation of sorts from ACA, the state health care agency, the Department of Children and Families. What does that entail? What does that mean that these regulatory agencies are launching an investigation?
Yeah, it should trigger an investigation from ACA, but we found a number of cases where it did not trigger an investigation from ACA. So, you know, I don't know what was happening, but they've promised to change that so that there is a little more sort of transparency or communication between the two groups. For DOH, the Department of Health, I'm not sure whether they ever investigated the nurses, because in many of the cases, there was actually someone that the Department of Children and Families found was directly responsible. For instance, when we had the case where the woman was dropped, and the CNA, the certified nursing assistant, admitted that they dropped her and broke five of her bones and put her back in bed without telling.
Wow. Without saying, and the National Center for Fatality Review and Prevention in Washington says only 13 states have established elder death review teams. Florida is not among them. Quickly, William Scott, obviously you're in favor of such a review team for the Sunshine State, correct?
Absolutely. Anything that we can do to investigate these crimes and to send a message to the nursing home community that you have to protect the residents has to be taken. But there has been an emphasis over the last few years in deregulation and in minimizing government oversight of businesses. And you have to remember that nursing home industry is one of the biggest industries in the state of Florida. Billions of dollars flow into it from Medicare and Medicaid, but we see very little oversight.
And it's really a remarkable story, Melanie. And I want to just say in the few seconds we have left, remarkable reporting, Melanie, via the USA Today Network on really alarming findings about elder abuse in Florida. Melanie Payne, thanks so much for being with us. Melanie is a reporter for the USA Today Network. Check her story out online. And William Scott is an attorney. He specializes in Florida elder abuse cases, full disclosure, involving a case that's related to one of my coworkers. He is with us from WJCT in Jacksonville. William, Melanie, thanks to you both for being on the Florida Roundup. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Finally, in the roundup this week, hundreds of thousands of Floridians got the right to vote. Return to the right to vote here, Melissa. Amendment 4 went into effect on Tuesday. It allows most felons to register to vote after they've completed their sentences. Across the state, felons lined up at their supervisor of elections offices to register, including Tom Robinson. He hasn't been able to vote since 1979.
I'm just grateful for this day. I thank my God, my Lord. I just want everybody to come out and register for their voter registration card and do the things that they need to do to vote to be a productive citizen of society.
Deneen Clark lost her right to vote in 2006 after a felony conviction. She's now 53 and tried getting her right to vote restored through the state's clemency process, writing letters, pleading her case, all to no avail. That's when Clark began petitioning for the constitutional amendment that voters approved in November.
I guess that's why I'm emotional about it, because I got out there and I knocked on doors and I asked people, you know, and it was amazing to me that a lot of people didn't vote, don't vote. And I asked them, do it for me.
The last time Lorenzo Latson was able to vote was back in 2011.
It feels great. It feels outstanding. Any election that's coming up, I'm going to be a participant.
He came to the office to register to vote in Miami-Dade County with the co-worker, Clarence Office.
For me, it's like a sense of renewal.
Office took a few hours off of work to register.
I think it's a step for everyone who's been disenfranchised. All these years, there's people that haven't been in trouble for 30 and 40 years who aren't able to vote for one thing they may have done when they were a kid.
Now, Desmond Mead is the president of the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition. He drove to the office of his election supervisor, reminiscing with his family about the 5-year-long grassroots campaign leading to Amendment 4.
You know, on the drive over here, thinking about how in the civil rights era, how, you know, dads used to take their family to go vote with them. and me realizing that I had never had the opportunity to take my family to go vote.
Quite a week.
Well, he does now.
Yeah.
What a week it's been, and lots of new voters in the state. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. That is our show today. The Florida Roundup, produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Bridget O'Brien are producers.
Jason Sabkis, the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, also our technical director. Theme music is provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at AaronLibos.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next week.